This is a speaker meeting. Kieran will speak for 10 minutes and then turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Richard, who will share his experience, strength, and hope. Now I'd like to introduce Kieran.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Kieran. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kieran.
Welcome to all the new folks. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks, whoever asked me to speak 10 minutes ago. Otherwise, yeah, I would have been like out of town or something. So I'm a little nervous, but I come to this meeting like almost every week, so it's actually really an honor and a privilege to be able to get up here and, you know, try to share the message of Alcoholics Anonymous with all you guys today. My sobriety date's September 30th of 2012, so I have like 21, 22 months or something. It's not my first time in AA. I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous in 2008 after, you know, being arrested for the whatever time, and went to an outpatient rehab program, and that introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous, which planted the seed because obviously I didn't stay sober the whole time. I was 23 at the time and wasn't really ready to be sober, but I disguised that by saying that I had a problem with the God thing and all that stuff. But so yeah, I've had DUIs, I've been arrested a lot, I dropped out of college, I did a bunch of weird shit, but none of that really actually makes me alcoholic. What makes me alcoholic is that when I start drinking, I have little or no control over how much more I drink, or when I honestly want to stop, I find that I can't stop altogether. And that's what makes me alcoholic. And the only solution I've found to living a full, happy, sober life is the 12 steps. That was funny. Yeah. The 12 steps, which are in the big book. For me, AA really had to be the last house on the block, you know what I mean? Like, if I could have any other way to just not get fucked up and be cool and fine and happy, I would just do that, you know? I really wouldn't come here all the time, every day, and, you know, it says in the book, like, nobody likes the leveling of the pride and self-searching it takes to take these, keep doing this, but you guys know what I mean, like to do the steps, like, it's not necessarily easy, but it's really simple, and that's what I try to do today, you know. I don't know what to say. I guess I can tell you like a story of what my drinking looked like so I can identify, you know, because the first step for me was, I mean, I think for all of us is really important to really have a grasp on that, to really know and fully concede to my innermost self that I'm alcoholic, you know, and that took me a long time because, again, I think, and oh, I really like that we read chapter 3 in here, more about alcoholism. For me, that's the most relatable thing in the book, you know, like that it's the great obsession of every abnormal drinker to prove we could drink like everyone else, and like I really related to that, and also all the things that we tried to do to prove that we were normal drinkers, which like for me was not really drinking beer. Well, yeah, like I would say I would try to drink beer only, and then I would get to my second or third beer, and then I'd be on to what I really wanted to do, which was drink whiskey, which led me to do cocaine, because that was like a really good combination, right? And so, yeah, like like I said, I was in AA for a little while when I was 23, and I had my 24th birthday, my first like sober birthday, and I actually really thought I was sober because I was going to meetings and I was, you know, taking the steps with the sponsor and making friends in AA and hanging out with young people, but I was like smoking weed also. And so they threw me a surprise, all these sober people threw me a surprise birthday party, and I like smoked two blunts and then showed up to my friend's house, and it was a surprise birthday party for me, and I was like really weirded out, obviously, because I was stoned, and I was like, oh my god, do I smell like weed right now, and all these people are sober, but yeah, I thought that was what sober was, you know, because I wasn't drinking, and it doesn't say anything about weed in the 12 steps, so, but then eventually, like I said, I didn't stick around. It was like, you know, I didn't want to be sober, and I figured that I was at that point 24 years old, and why would I lie about what I was doing? I would just do whatever the fuck I wanted to do and just get fucked up or not or something. I thought that I could drink like a normal person, but everyone around me was still drinking kind of heavily. So then I left Los Angeles and came back here, and within a matter, you know, I thought that I could carry the principles of AA, whatever that meant to me at the time, and still drink, you know, like I could drink and use and try to have a connection with a higher power and whatever. I thought that would work out, and it didn't. I was going to say something about that, but... Oh yeah, and then I thought that if I came back up here, and then I knew that AA existed, right? Like, so if shit really hit the fan, then I knew where to go. And I figured that in the Bay Area, people in AA would still smoke weed too. Like, I really was convinced of that. It's like, why not? So anyways, obviously, drugs and alcohol, drugs are a part of my story also. And yeah, eventually I was here for another 3 years, kind of trying to, that was like the first time I actually tried to manage and control my drinking. You know, before my first intro to AA, it was more like external, you know, pressure and outward consequences of my drinking that were kind of making it seem like maybe I shouldn't. And then, but I never really tried not to. And then the next 3 years was really trying very hard to manage and control. And then the 6 months ish before I got sober, trying not to at all. And so every day I'd wake up thinking, okay, I'm not going to do what I did yesterday, and I would end up doing it again. And that kind of helps, you know, ring home the idea that I really didn't have control over my drinking or anything else. So yeah, I guess like what I want to say to the new folks is that, you know, I hope you find in AA what you're looking for. I know, like, different things resonate with different people. And for me, what really kept me coming back and what I really wanted when I got here is when I heard someone say that they were super comfortable with themselves and in their own skin. You know, like, I didn't think that that was possible, but I obviously had a little bit enough hope to keep showing up and taking suggestions, and most importantly, taking the steps with the sponsor who showed me how to do that. I've had a lot of different sponsors. I didn't have an easy time finding someone to work with, and that's just my experience. But I'm working with someone now who's really just like, okay, you know, my life's not manageable, so how is your life manageable by me? Like, I'm not going to tell you, you know, they're not going to tell me what to do, where to work, who to date, that sort of stuff, you know? Like, it's just like, really about, for me today, finding a connection with a higher power and cultivating that connection. And I know that's kind of weird and scary. It definitely was for me. Maybe to believe in something was okay, but to trust it and rely on it was very scary. But I thought, like it says in the book, circumstances made me willing to believe, because I don't really, I mean, like I said at the beginning, I don't have any other option. If I did, I would have done it. And so, you know, today I like any opportunity I have to be of service, including getting up here and talking in front of all you guys, I'll say yes to it, because that's what you guys did for me, and because that's kind of what this thing is about, you know, it's to give it away, to keep it. And yeah, I think that's been exactly 10 minutes, so I'm gonna sit down. Thank you guys so much.
My name is Richard. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Richard.
And I was late, and I was stuck in traffic. I started at this point, and I went to pick up my prescription sunglasses in the city, and I decided to take another way to go back home. And my plan was to take a shower, change, and come back on 80. And I was stuck in traffic, and ended up that I have to speed all the way around, and did the whole Bay Area, and end up here again. And and in a big way, that is sort of like the story of my life. I run around like a fucking idiot, hating every motherfucker that's in my way, and I end up in the same place. And I spoke at a meeting, you know, I was just thinking about having... Had a little thing, what do you call those things here, about like 3 years sober in this city, you know, it's called a home group, and it was on Guerrero Street, it was a mission district, it was actually still dangerous. I'll try. And that was a long time ago, and, you know, I was just one of those alcoholics what can I say? You know, I grew up scared, you know? I was scared, I was fearful. What the hell is that to do with anything? And I was sensitive, and I remember clearly one time, I knew I was very sensitive because I couldn't take any criticism. And I remember reading a newspaper, this is when I was, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old, and I was reading this, I don't know, some kind of advisory column, kind of like those girly column thingy. It's like, girls like guys that are sensitive. Like, that's me, you know? I'm very sensitive, but what I didn't get is that I was sensitive towards my feelings, not yours, you know? and that's sort of like been the deal, you know? I was scared. I was listening to some guy share this morning that, you know, we all started out like that, and it ended up to be some fucking asshole, this really scary kid. And then you ended up to be this liar, cheat, manipulator, and all of these things, you know, and drugs and alcohol somewhere in between. Like, what happened, you know? And I can never really reconcile the whole thing of what happened. You know, when I found pot, you know, actually, I started drinking beer when I was very young. It was, you know, I grew up in Asia. It was quite easy. You just go to the store and you buy a beer. Nobody cares, you know. And I remember drinking a beer and staring at the cloud, eating potato chips, and say, "This is okay," you know. But it was no big deal. But it was here that I discovered pot, and you know, and that was sort of like I decided to take this detour, so to speak, and. And, you know, it just progressed. It progressed fast, and, you know, and my first DUI was, you know, I think it was like a week after I turned 18, you know, and I remember the cop clearly told me, "Bummer," you know, "He just turned 18, pal," you know, and I got another one like a year later, and I sort of like quit that particular brand of drugs, you know, that's bad, you know. And that was Quaalude. I'm sort of dating myself. I used to take 5-6 of them and drink on top of it. Sort of, you know, like her, and, you know, you sort of like just play chemist, you know. You learn this and you learn that, and you find your body, you find where that zone is, you know. I'm always uncomfortable. I'm always full of anxiety, you know. I'm always full of social... this thing, I just don't want you to find out that I have those feelings. So for a long time, it was like, you know, whatever it takes to cover me up, I'll do it, you know? Whether it's some, you know, disco suit or whatever, man, some haircut, whatever. You know, talk like you, I'll do it, you know? So anything to not be me. But then yet I love me and I'm obsessed about me, you know? It's like this contradiction. I just couldn't really quite understand what the hell does this mean. And then there's a certain amount of chemical bliss. It all goes away. I'm cool again, you know? And that's what I like. And I tell you, even today, like today, you know, I'm going on vacation tomorrow. I've had a really rough year, but things are coming around, you know, finally. I'm late, and I'm supposed to do service, right? Everything's supposed to be cool. But the fucking guy in front of me causing my traffic. I mean, it's like, never mind the traffic's miles long, but the guy in front of me, I want to execute him right there. Because he's really fucking pissing me off, you know? And And then the next thought is, you know, a little Xanax and a little bit of, Miller High Life will work too, you know? And that's how my brain works. And it's still like that. I mean, it doesn't mean that I'm not spiritual. It doesn't mean that I don't work the fucking steps. I do. I do, you know? And I have a decent life. But the alcoholism part of it, you know? Like, I just don't know how people can just show up every day and be blissful. Maybe they're just as fucked up as we are. I don't know. But all I know is I'm fucked up, you know. I'm a mess. But if I don't pick up a drink and chances are, I mean, the obsessive mind in me, it's still the same guy as I was, you know, 25, 30 years ago. It's still the same guy. The only difference, I think, these days is, I think age has something to do with it, and no, it doesn't. I'm still a rager. I can still get in people's face and go. I guess these days I can go make amends, you know. I make a mess all the time. 40 minutes is a long time to kill. So I'll just do some date thing. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous via rehab in 1988, and I had no intention of ending up in a rehab because who wants to go to a rehab? I just thought that I had emotional problems, man. You know, I got serious problems, you know, that need to be solved. And it was basically some girl that I wanted to break up with finally broke up with me, and I couldn't handle it. So, and I just started to pile up with tons of cocaine, tons of pill, tons of booze, and just be a pig about it. And just like 2-3 weeks later, and the pain didn't go away. And I was like in some kind of chemical delusion. And I went to some EAP program, and you know, they recommended me to go to some place to clear my head, and I thought it was some place in Palm Springs or something. So I said, I'll go, you know, and I brought my, you know, my radio and a bunch of coke, and I show up and I show up at this place, you know, and next thing you know, they're asking me all these fucking questions. When was I supposed to do drugs? Is it? I don't, you know. And next thing you know, I think I was able to add it up. Like, you're not supposed to do anything in these kind of places. And I went to the bathroom and I did finish up everything. I had coke running all over my place. And they almost kicked me out the first day. And they let me stay, you know. And that's how I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I went to boarding school, so I know how to fucking talk to these asshole counselors, you know, whatever you want to say, I'll say it, you know, just leave me alone. And I remember one time, it was like the 25th day, you know, it was like that day was my day, and they put me up on a fucking chair, and they were like going at me, you know, what is wrong with you, you know, they were a group attacking me, you know, and I cried, you know, like I haven't cried for a long time, and that was the I guess the beginning of me being real. And I went to some kind of like, I started to listen to a little direction, you know, you have to ask, like, you gotta have to go to these meetings, you have to get a number, you gotta do all these things they tell you to do. And anyway, so I show up at, I was working in downtown San Francisco, this was the 80s, and it was like the, you know, Michael J. Fox, you know, that kind of days. And I want to be that life. I want that life. I don't want my life, which is like fucking miserable in the office. And, you know, and just wasn't getting ahead fast enough. And, you know, I was miserable. And I go to downtown with all these people that were sober for a long, long time. And they had very successful careers and lives and wives and cars, all those things. You know, I want some of that. I want. So I stuck around AA thinking that's what I'm going to get. You know, cash and prizes. And not necessarily in that order. And And of course it didn't come. I mean, it came, but it was very slow, you know. So for me, that was just, you know. And then meanwhile, I did the young people in AA thing. I've learned to socialize. I've learned to grow up in AA and, you know, and be sort of somewhat normal, to be able to catch up with some of those emotional deficit that I'd suffered for all these years. And so I was getting well, right? You know, I was getting good. You know, I'm ready. I'm ready to go take on the world again, you know. And this thing is just, and then, they, you know, and then you're starting to call your sponsor and he's starting to tell you the same fucking thing, you know, turn it over to God and, you know, go help a newcomer. And after a while, I was like, that is, no, that's not what I want. I want my life to be better, you know. And so I start plotting, you know, and I start looking around and like, you know, I'm missing something here. I'm not doing it right the first time, you know. I was a kid. I just didn't know how to do this stuff. Now I do, you know. I mean, so I started planning how to do this, and it took me about, like, you know, after, like, you know, being in AA for about 5-6 years, and you know, you practically grew up in AA. How do you leave this place? You know, it was, you have to actually engineer this thing, you know, you want to make it stick. So I started sort of reversing the steps, you know. It's quite doable. You start, where are they? You know, you definitely don't practice these things in any of your affairs. You definitely don't pray, you know, and you just basically start copying resentment left and right. Start making a mess. And these are quite natural, if you're not called to my type, to do it like that. And, you know, and you start taking other folks' inventory and you start demanding other people to apologize to you. You believe there's no God. There's only, you know, money, power, and prestige. And next thing you know, you're not powerless over alcohol. You're not powerless over shit. Now get the fuck out of my way. And I remember the first time I went out, that was in 95 or 96. And there's a bunch of us, you know. It's like I went out with like 3-4 of my rat pack, you know, that decided to go out. So we went out together. And I was like Margarita on the Rocks. I drank 6 of those on my first night. I was fucked up, man. It was so painful the next day. You know, what have I done? You know, what have I done? You know? But that's only 24 hours, you know. If you're an alcoholic to my type, you can hang. You know, you can hang. And you fast forward, I got a career in Wall Street, you know, that's what I wanted. And you know, the whole thing, man, I was a fucking asshole, you know, insider trading, every fucking thing you can get your hands on, I'll do them all, you know, and it's just like the movies, you know, just like the movies, I did them all, you know, just wake up to a big fat line of coke and just drink at lunch, drink at dinner, and just do the whole fucking thing, you know, and I was some fucking third world country, and you know, next thing you know, I'm listening to some foreign alarm sirens in an ambulance, you know, and I'm ODing, you know, and next thing you know, I woke up and the doctor was looking at me, and my friend was saying he did a bunch of this thing. And then the doctor started talking to me in Indonesian, and I have no idea what he was talking about. And basically, my friend was translating. He said, "Why would he do this?" You know, and doesn't he speak Indonesian? He said, "No, he's American." And the doctor just nodded and said, "Oh, I get it. You know, he's American. He's a fool." You know, and that didn't stop anything really. It just sort of slowed me down a little bit. You know, I got to get my game back. But by then I was becoming more and more miserable to a point in which that is very difficult to move your life from day to day. In other words, the best chemical that I could find and afford were not able to provide the bliss that I need in order to live. And that means the 24-hour clock ticks very slowly, you know. And these were the days of of like, you know, they start delivering grocery on the internet type of deal, you know. And that's how I lived. I live in a little condo in the city, and I wait for the grocery guy with just two bottles of wine, and I was just, you know, in the drug dealer thing. And in terms of choices, let me tell you, I have no choice of whether to use or not to use. In terms of powerlessness, I have three suppliers, one in San Jose, one in Belmont, and one in the city, just in case, you know. And and every day I go to work or something like that, or see a client, I would have to make a decision which pit stop I was going to make. And I remember, for me, it was not so much of like how much that I can use, rather is how many of these high session that I can squeeze into 24 hours. As much of that I can squeeze in, then I'm having a good day, because my whole thing is focused on that. And I remember I was driving on 280, coming up on Crystal Spring Road or some street like that, and I'm thinking about, should I fucking go see Sanchez now or what, you know? I'm driving, I'm fighting my brain, you know? I just wait till I get home, you know? Get back to the city, got all kinds of stuff there. I couldn't wait, you know? And I had to, like, fuck it, you know? Instead of, like, waiting for the next exit, I just decided to just jump the fucking island, you know? Just jump the island and bend all four rims, you know? And go get my shit. Because I want that one more session in from San Mateo back to the city, you know? And that's what I wanted. And at that moment, I can't stop that. To me, that's the kind of a fiend that I've become. And I certainly wasn't raised to be like that. You know, my families are very, very good people. And my siblings are so straight, they wouldn't know what to do with me. And so, forward. I mean, I had to endure that for two more years. And finally, it was a physical bottle. It was so painful in the sense that my whole throat burns of canker sores. I'm down to like a, I don't know, 130, 140 pounds, 135 pounds. I remember I was flexing in the mirror, you know. I had six pack because it was all bones, you know. Saying to myself, Bruce fucking Lee, man, you know. This is it. I was so delusional, you know, and I just can't go on anymore. And I remember I had a thought, you know, like I had to like finish this stuff. You know, I just can't do it anymore. You know, I just, my whole face hurts. Everything hurts. And so I made this phone call. And no, I had a thought, you know. And this thought proceeded with another thought, which was when I first went out 5 years ago. I remember I was in Greece. I was in the island of Greece, and I was fortunate enough to convince some European girl to go to bed with me. And I remember, you know, I was drunk. I remember, like, you know, I was winking to the skies. You know, those guys, their hats are off to me now, you know. And the same moment, fast forward 5 years later, I said to myself, no, they were right. They, meaning all that shit that I heard in AA, they were right. What am I gonna do, man? Mm-hmm. What am I gonna do, man? So I know only thing I was able to do was call this one person. And I call him, and he said, I'll be there, you know? And after I hang up the phone, you know, you're starting to feel better, and 20 minutes later, you hope he doesn't show up. It's because I've changed my mind. I really have changed my mind. And the fucker showed up like an hour and a half later, ringing my doorbell, and wanted to take me to a meeting in Dry Dock. I remember it was a very bright, sunny day. And my head hurt like you just won't believe, you know. Come on, bro, I can't go in there. Can we just walk around the block for a couple times? I need some exercise, you know, just a little walk. Get some water. And I was sick, man, you know. Feeling so good. And I didn't go to a meeting for another, until Tuesday, I think it was. And I remember I went back to the High Noon. It was on Dolores Street. And I remember walking there and I saw Sai and I was sobbing like a little girl, you know, and Sai came to me. Are you ready now? Yes, I'm ready. I'm really ready, you know. And that was 2002. And, you know, I haven't had to, in February, I haven't had a chance to, I haven't had to pick up a drink or a drug again. And I did the steps. I mean, I was always quite compliant with respect to doing what I need to get done. The hard part for me was never about the mechanics of the program. It's always about the real deal, you know, like, do you really want to deflate your ego all the way down, or do you want reality to deflate you to a point in which you must do this? And I, right away, I would say, of course I do the first one. But in actuality, it's always reality. Will always shape me to where it wants me to be. As I get older, I realize that I haven't changed for all these years. I'm the same guy that caused me to drink and use and do all those things. The only difference these days is like if you put the jug in the plug, I mean, when you stop this insanity of taking drugs and drinking and there's always shopping, there's always other things too, but if you seriously think about none of those things work anymore, you just sit with a lot of feeling, man, a lot of pain, you know, a lot of fucking people you want to, you know, execute. Because, you know, I just don't like life on life's term. I don't like it, you know, and what the hell does that have to do with alcoholism? It means I'm just a fucking asshole, you know. And for me, it means if I really fast forward, if I don't apply the solutions of what I've learned in here in its totality. And for me, it's just pretty half-assed most of the time, you know, a quick 10-step, call my sponsor, make some apologies, try not to do it again, full well know I'll do it again, you know. You know, my sobriety's okay. You know, I aspire to be those old guys, you know, that they're almost like they walk on clouds, you know. They really are. They have big lives and they have big hearts. They show up in Alcoholics Anonymous with conviction. It's all about service. For me, it's never about service. It's always about me, you know. Don't you want to listen to my shit, you know? But I think I'm trying to get out of that model, because I don't think it works very well. I don't think it does. In the sense that it's worked well enough for me to move from point A to point B on a good day, not so scale, you know. On a bad day, it's a pretty rough ride, you know. And it's nothing on the outside that's wrong, really. It's what's going on in my head, you know. It's always about that. And then I must realize in God's world, that means all of you. That means that fat fuck in front of me too, you know? And if God loves me, he must love him too. And if I want God's grace for me, I must accept God's grace for him, for all of you. And those are hard things for me to get, you know? It's really, really difficult to understand all of those big reality in which that for a long time, I said, you know, save that for the church folks, man. I just want to, like, you know, be cool, you know? No, man, it's not about being cool. You gotta get it, otherwise you can't make it for the long haul. And that's what I found. That, you know, if you gotta grind it out. And I go to, you know, a couple of men's meetings, and thank God that I'm not the only one. You know, everybody, when they speak honestly, they trip the same way. You know, whether you have a big job or you look like a movie star, or you're some fat guy, or whatever. You all trip the same way. And it's that power of the we, which is in the beginning of the first step, that allowed me to actually go on for another day, you know, without taking any drugs. I mean, I have so many good experiences in AA I can't even describe to you. But in general terms, when things doesn't go my way, when I'm in the shitter, when I'm like, you know, when all my options in terms of the things that all of my control lever are taken from me, the best thing that I've discovered is take your fingers out of the cookie jar. You can't fuck with it anymore. You're completely fire right now. You gotta let life roll. You know, chances are, it goes my way. Now, that has been my experience. Now, does it feel good? No, no. A guy like me demands to be feel good all the time. You know, I just, for some reason, I just never get the memo that life is supposed to be painful. I think that life is supposed to be fucking Disneyland on fucking acid, you know? In fact, you know, the best time that I had in Disneyland was on acid. You know? And that's how warped I am. And I haven't been warped for like 12, 13 years, but I'm still warped because I just don't see things clearly. I don't. I mean, I've read a lot of books. I could impress, you know, on topics if I want to, you know. But in terms of how to live my life, seriously, I don't know how to do it. I really don't. I'm clueless. And but that's it, you know. That's my life.